Brian Chi, who will tell us the cold nuclear matter and
nuclear.
Jesus Christ.
I should change the title. I'm gonna say, if I go down to the States or something.
You are a mini music nuclear.
Hey, I grew up in a town where the bus was all set at Shock River nuclear.
Wow, what do I tell my friends about this?
Well, we also have garages and. Anyway. Right. Take it away.
Thank you for the invitation. It's really great to be here. And actually, despite the title, what I'm going to talk about is actually some recent works that people have done to study strongly coupled gauge theory using gauge gravity duality. And I have to apologize to the experts in the field, which is basically the audience, that this talk is going to be very heuristic. There won't be any technical details. And also, because of the amount of literature out there, there's really a lot of work in this field. I won't be really listing all the references. But here, for each section of my talk, I listed some very general, really good reviews on the subject. And hopefully, their references will be a very nice place to go if you have specific interests. So, so briefly, to begin the talk, I'll give a very, very short introduction to gauge gravity duality. And along the way, what I want to point out is just some recent developments in making the gauge side more and more realistic. For example, we can add in fundamental matters and flavors, and we can turn on some physically relevant parameters such as the baryon chemical potential. And then for the second part of my talk, I'll try to, by pointing out certain, giving a partial list of the works that people have done in this industry, and try to motivate this gauge gravity duality and to study the gauge theory program, and in particular pointing out what we can say about QCD itself. And the third part of my talk is basically the title of my talk, which will study one specific example of the holograph gauge theory at zero temperature and finite chemical potential. And we'll in particular study the phase diagram in this model and see what we can say about that. And this is the work that I've recently done with people at UBC, Moshe Rosali, Mark Van Ramstein, my supervisor, Jackson Wu, who's a postdoc at the Triumph, and myself. Okay. So very quickly, gauge gravity duality. This is the picture basically Samuel showed us in a horizontal way on Tuesday. So we begin with there are two different descriptions for the deep brain physics. And depending on which part of parameter space you're looking at, in one description, the deep brains are basically hypersurfaces embedded in 10-dimensional Minkowski space where open string ends can end on. But these objects are actually solid tonic objects in perturbative string theory. They also couple to some bulk closed string nodes. And to study this system, we can take a simplifying limit, which is we can decouple off all the bulk fields and their coupling to the brain. And we all can also just keep the lowest energy excitation on the brain. And what that does for us, if we have NC number of these deep brains, we will be getting the effective theory, which describes the system, will be a UNC supersymmetric EML theory on the world volume of deep brain. In another picture, what we can do is we can actually completely replace the deep brain by the gravitational geometry by the geometry it generates. And this geometry for DP brain turns out to be given the name in supergravity black P brain solutions. They are higher dimensional generalization to black hole solutions. And the corresponding limit in the gravity side that we just did on the gauge theory side is basically to focusing in on the near horizon part of the black P brain geometry. And what I want to remind everybody is that to use gravity description, we have to take the lambda EMLs to be large, which is the tube coupling to be large, and we have to take the number of D brains, NC, to be large. And I'm putting subscript C there because, as we've seen, this kind of setup gives us an effective theory which only has adjoint sector, and NC is equal to the number of colors in this case. And also, another thing which will be important for us is that there will be a, this, the coordinates, which measures the distance from these springs, and that translates into the gauge theory to be some kind of energy scale in the gauge theory. Okay. So to make things more interesting, what we can do is to actually add in fundamental degrees of freedom and add flavors. And to do that, we have to introduce some new objects, which is we put an additional stack of brain. Let's say there are NF of them. NF is number of flavors. And when we do this and we introduce this new stack of brain into the original setup, what we introduce are these new degrees of freedom, which are the strings that stretch between these two types of brains. And what that does, after we take the simplifying limit that we just described about, is that they actually give us the fundamental sector of the theory with a global UNF symmetry. However, there is a problem to describe the system on the gravity side, which is, in general, it is very difficult to find a gravitational solution in supergravity, which is generated by intersecting stacks of brains. So the best we can do is to say we take a very, very small number of NF and pretend they're just, and ignore their gravitational back reaction, and just pretend they are just probes in the original geometry generated by these NC color brains. Okay, so to reiterate, we have to take NF much smaller than NC, and this limit has interpretation on the gauge theory side, which is called the Crunched approximation. That is, whenever you're computing some Feynman diagrams, you ignore all the fermion loops. And to describe the brain dynamics turn out to be described by this SDBI action, which has this form. And if you ignore the F under the square root, it's just describing the volume of this D brain. But the Fs are there. The Fs are gauge fields in the UNF gauge group. And what the reason why they are there is because we're actually putting in some objects that also has the open string degrees of freedom ending on them. And at low energy, that's what these F alpha betas are describing. Okay. So now we can put in fundamentals. Since things like neutrons and protons are being described by are baryons, so it is physically interesting to consider the physics of finite baryon chemical potential. Here's a plot of a proposed phase diagram for QCD. And the vertical axis is temperature. The horizontal axis is the baryon chemical potential. And so we can see, even at zero temperature, as we travel along the baryon chemical potential axis, there are many, many interesting phase structures. OK. And these finite baryon chemical potential physics would also find its application to, say, the physics of the core of the neutron star as well. Okay, so in order to put this into the gauge gravity duality picture, what we need to do on the gauge theory side is to turn on an operator that looks like this, where mu is the baryon chemical potential, and psi here is the wave function for a fundamental particle. And what happens is psi dagger psi basically, say if it's the quark wave function, psi dagger psi basically counts the number of quarks in the system and divide that by nc, by definition, that gives us the number of baryons if we have confinement. Okay. But on the gravity side, what do we have to do? And thanks to Brian, so that we don't really have to explain that, he explained on Monday that all we need to do is to turn on an appropriate gravity field such that it has the appropriate boundary condition so that it will induce this source term in the boundary theory. And the correct thing to do for us in this case is to turn on the time component of a U1 field in the UNF gauge theory. And this gauge potential basically gives an electric field on the probe brain that we just talked about. So F alpha beta actually now has an electric field in there. OK. Yes?
Sure.
Okay, so that's actually the thing I will be talking about in the last part of my talk. So that's the transition. So we have a confined phase, but here the preferred configuration is to have zero baryons. And then across this line, there's actually a transition to a place where you have actually, it's preferred to have finite number of baryons. And then you cross another line, go into this the two color superconducting phase that I won't be talking about, which actually actually, in the large NC limit, that phase is supposedly being replaced by something which I will talk about later called chiral density wave, which is being characterized by an inhomogeneous condensate of chiral condensates. So, thanks for the question. So now, let's talk about the potential possibility of applying gauge gravity duality to QCD. So the first thing is I have to point out that gravity dual to QCD is unknown. So why do we care to use this gauge gravity duality to analyze QCD? Okay, for one thing, gauge gravity duality, if you take that as it's actually a very efficient tool for generating effective theories. And if you were studying say the certain gauge theories which are close cousins to QCD, which happens to also have a gravity dual, we could expect to learn some qualitative behavior of the real QCD. So quantitative predictions is not really what we're looking for, even though for some reason, from the results so far, we are actually seeing some numerical coincidences with the experimental data. Okay, so all we're getting is some, all we are really expecting is some qualitative agreements. But there are also some other effective theories which describe strongly coupled physics in QCD. And this new technique could potentially just give a complementary picture at least to those other pictures. Okay, but there is more. It turns out that gauge gravity duality is also a very efficient way to analyze the problem at finite variant chemical potential. And it can also be a very systematic way to analyze dynamical properties in strongly coupled gauge theory. And in the sense that for these two aspects, there, for example, for one of the very popular effect theory for QCD is the lattice gauge theory. It actually encounters technical problems. They are still solving them and making progress, but it's very hard to apply those techniques into these two, especially these two areas. And also for other effective type of theory, effective theory, which such as the NJL model, you tend to treat, it's very successful on its own, but you tend to be more of a case by case scenario. So there isn't a systematic way of applying the same technique everywhere to get the physics out. Okay. So what are the advances that we can make by using gauge gravity duality to at least these two areas at finite variant chemical potential and at these dynamical properties? So by applying these techniques to study the phase diagram, we can actually have an alternative picture to the phase transition, to the mechanisms which drives the phase transitions in QCD. And many of the phase transitions are actually related to topological changes in the gravitational theory. And one thing that I'm interested in is actually how these new intuitions can help us to find new order parameters for the phases in gauge theory. And one recent such example is people have been using the holographic version of holographic description of entanglement entropy as an order parameter for confinement. That's another confinement, not the confinement with respect to temperature. So, and also we can apply the gauge gravity duality to calculate dynamical properties. And this is a real huge industry nowadays. And especially when these things are applied to calculate the hydrodynamics of the quark gluon plasma at strong coupling. And the things that people have calculated are like the shear viscosity, the drag forces, the jet quenching parameter, and so on and so forth. There are a lot of things that people can analyze. While these quantities are very important on their own, and they do provide a certain amount of quantitative and qualitative predictions for what we will see in colliders, they can also be used just to analyze, just to determine whether the things that we're seeing in experiment is strongly coupled or weakly coupled, because they tend to be more sensitive to the coupling than most of the thermodynamic variables, say the free energy. And one example for that is in ANGS4, the free energy from weak coupling and strong coupling actually only differs by a factor of 3/4. But the shear viscosity actually goes from infinity to some constant value. Okay. There's actually one more aspect that the gauge gravity duality can do better, which is now we can actually construct gravity duals to gauge theories with or without supersymmetry, with or without a mass gap, with different matter contents, and in different dimensions. And with the enlarged space of calculable quantities that I mentioned on my last slide, and applied to all of these different types of gauge theories, we might expect that there will be new universality classes that emerges out of these investigations. And one quantity that in particular people have talked about is this eta over S parameter, where eta is the shear viscosity and S is the entropy density in a plasma. So it turns out for all gauge theories with a gravity dual, this ratio turns out to be constant for all of them and the same, at least at the large NC and large lambda limit. And what happens is that this quantity do get corrected by 1/NC and lambda corrections. And until Wednesday this week, actually, all the known cases are such that the correction is positive. But thanks to Dr. Myers that we have learned that there is a class of theory that potentially can give a negative correction. And maybe that class can be embedded in string theory. We can talk to Dr. Myers about that. Okay, that's the second part of my talk. The third part of my talk, I'll be basically just trying to use the Sakai-Sugi model as a demonstration of the ideas that we talked about before. But before we get into the details, I actually want to give you all the punchlines of this analysis. Okay, so the Sakai-Sugi model actually on the gauge theory side at low temperature gives you the exact matter content of large NC QCD with chiral fermions, with a small number of flavors. And what we found by looking at the system at zero temperature and finite chemical potential is such that as we crank up the baryon chemical potential, we found there is a phase transition going from a phase which is preferably having no baryons to a phase where there is finite baryon density. And depending on the number of flavors, this transition goes from a second order for one flavor physics to a first order phase transition when we have flavor greater than or equal to 2. Okay. And also along the way, while we're analyzing this phase with finite baryon density, what happens is that we also find a potential interpretation or a gravitational manifestation of the quark Fermi surface. And this will be very interesting to us because many of the phase structures that we've seen in QCD, in the QCD phase diagram, are actually related to the instability of the quark Fermi surface. And if our proposal is actually confirmed, we will be able to do some analysis and understand those type of questions using a gravitational setup and S-strong coupling as well. And also, we also found some evidences for possibly an interpretation for the inhomogeneous phase that I talked about earlier. So potentially just through a gravity analysis, which is purely classical, we could have learned something which is quite important for trying to understand the phase structure of QCD. Okay, let's go into the Sakai-Sugi model. So the Sakai-Sugi model is being constructed by having D4, D8, and D8 bar brains playing together. And the D4 brains plays the role of the color brains for the one that is going to generate the background that we'll be working with later on. And the DA bars are the flavor brains, which provides the fundamental sector of the theory. And it turns out that the 4A strings and 4A bar strings provide for us, respectively, the left-handed and right-handed quarks, the fundamental fermions in this case. And the brain setup is like this. In a 10-dimensional theory, we'll put in the D4 brain like this, and the world volume of D4 is, of course, 5 dimensions, which is put them in like that. But for the D8, we'll actually let it intersect only 4 of the world volume directions of the D4, and then skip one, and then occupy the rest of the directions. Okay, so the D8 is actually point-like in that particular direction. And what we would do is actually we will compactify this special direction and getting for us a four-dimensional theory. And the compactification radius that we choose, I'll just call it R. And besides doing this Kluze-Klein reduction, we will also pick up antiperiodic boundary condition around this special direction for the adjoint fermions. The fundamental fermions are not effective because they can travel in that direction. And this actually breaks supersymmetry. So in this model, there is actually no supersymmetry at all. And at a low energy scale, which is where the energy scale is much, much below this compactification scale, we only have the matter fields that you would expect from a large NCQCD and with a small number of chiral fermions. And these chiral fermions turns out to be massless. And here's the definition for the effective four-dimensional tube coupling, as usual, just in the as in the usual Kluze-Klein theory. And the theory is actually confining at low temperature. So there is a scale where this four-dimensional coupling actually becomes strong. Okay, I'll talk about that in the next slide. Okay, so that's the gauge theory side of the picture. On the gravitational side, the background that we'll be looking at is being generated by the stack of B4s. And topologically, what it looks like is it has a Minkowski space, and it has an S4, and it has the surface of a cigar. And all of these makes up 10 dimensions. And this Minkowski space is basically where the field theory happens. Okay. And remember, I was saying that there will be one direction which measures the distance to the brain, which gives the energy scale in the gauge theory. And that's being given by this length of the cigar. And the compactified direction that I mentioned is going around the cigar. Okay. And the way we're putting in the DADA bar, for our case, we're only considering the most symmetric configuration, which is we would put the DA and DA bar at the antipodal point of this compactified direction. Okay, and since DA and DA bar would basically be occupying all the rest of the direction, it actually just goes in and travels along this U direction. But what happens is that the topology of this space actually forces the DA and DA bar to join at the IR part of the theory of the geometry. And remember, the 4-8 and 4-8 bar strings respectively give us the right-hand and left-hand chiral fermions, which but at IR part of the geometry, there is really no distinction between the DA and DA bar. And therefore, there's no distinction between these two types of strings. So what that says to us is that there is a spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking in this case. So it's kind of nice that we actually have a picture for a spontaneous symmetry breaking in this case. But also, if we can get more quantitative, which is if we analyze the meson spectrum in this theory, we actually found a massless meson excitation, which corresponds to exactly the pion, which is responsible, the Goldstone boson, which is responsible for spontaneous chiral symmetry breaking.
Goes all the way down into the infrared, it necessarily does?
For this most symmetric setup, yes, it goes down.
So that means the forks would be exactly massless.
Right. Actually, that parameter that measures the distance to the tip of the cigar is not really the mass of the quark. Well, it's given the interpretation of it's the mass of the constituent quarks. Not the real quark. The real quark mass is actually given by the open string that connects the DADA bar, which becomes tachyonic of course in the IR. But that's just some more details about it. Okay, just to remind you to use supergravity, we have to take NC large, we have to take NC much, much greater than NF, and we also have to take lambda large. But as I mentioned before, lambda actually becomes strong at certain scale. And the scale turns out to be like this. And if we take the limit where the supergravity approximation is actually valid, we're actually getting rid of the exponential. And lambda, where the coupling becomes strong, is the same as the compactification scale. So this will be a problem for us, because this means that whenever we are using the supergravity picture for this, we are actually analyzing a dual five-dimensional theory. So we can't get rid of all the Kluze-Klein modes. So, but the thing is that we have seen in the case of, say, the chiral symmetry breaking, there is a massless excitation. And this object is massless, not really because of the Kolchak line reduction. It's because of the symmetry breaking. So at least in the sense of to analyze the physics of those excitations, we can still trust this model. And on the other hand, since we're only gunning for some qualitative descriptions, maybe we can just learn something from this model, even though we can't really get rid of the Kolchak line modes. Okay. I won't talk about the specific of the parameter matchings, their details, and I can show them to you later on. So let me just move on and actually talk about the physics, the thermodynamics of this system. So here I have a picture for a state in the gauge theory at finite baryon mechanical potential and at low temperature. I'm assuming here that all the configuration I'm considering are homogeneous in the field theory direction and on the sphere. So all the dynamics is really happening in these two directions. And in particular, actually, we'll be focusing on really just the dynamics of the objects along the DADA bar brain. Okay. Now, the mesons in this theory is actually being described by some open strings that and lives on the DADA bar brain. And remember, at finite chemical potential, we have to turn on the U1 part of the gauge field that lives on the DADA bar brain. And if that's not constant along the U direction, they will actually generate some flux. And they're really like electric flux in this case. And there will be baryons, and I'll be describing what baryons are in the gravity picture. So in the Sakai-Sugu model setup, the baryons are really D4 brains, which are wrapping the S4 in the geometry. And what I didn't tell you is that there is actually a remarkable amount of flux through the S4 in the geometry. So if you have something wrapping around it, it will induce an NC amount of charge on that on this sphere. So, but it's a closed surface. So there, by the Gauss's law, we can't really have any net charges on it. So it has to be drained out through some strings attached to them, and an NC number of fundamental strings, actually. And these strings will go into the whirl volume of the DA and DA bar. And those DA, DA bar will in turn becomes the sources for the flux, for the electric flux. So this is another way to see that you can couple baryon number to this A1 field, U1 field that we turned on in the bulk of the DADA bar theory. Okay, so I've talked about it has to be connected to DA by NC strings, and it actually sources the field that we turn on, which is responsible for the chemical potential. And energetically, in this configuration, baryons are preferred to be pulled onto the D8, just because the strings connecting then between them wants to minimize the energy. And if we calculate the mass for the baryons, which are just the tension of these wrapped D4s, it actually is minimizes at the tip of the cigar. And it's given, if you calculate it, it turns out to be like this. Okay. So the picture we have now is this. If in a phase which is preferred to have, we actually have the baryon density, and we have a lot of them, what happens is that they are just like electrons generating some electric field. And if we have more than one of them, they will want to repel each other. And because of the fact that their masses are being minimized at the tip of the cigar, gravity will pull them down. So there will be some equilibrium configuration for these. Okay. And what we can do is actually we can introduce a baryon charge distribution, baryon density distribution along this DA and DA bar brain. And just in any system, what we can do, since we have identified all the dynamical parties in the system, all we want to do now is just to minimize the energy for fixed chemical potential and see what is the minimal energy configuration is. Okay. So the free energy in this case actually has three parts. The first part is just the energy for the fluxes that we put in. And then there will be one part, which is just the masses for these charges, or for the baryons. And then there will be a last part, which accounts for the coupling between the charges and the fluxes. Okay. And if we minimize that, what we found is that there is actually a critical chemical potential where a phase, which is vacuum, becomes a phase where the baryon density is actually non-zero. And this critical chemical potential happens exactly at the minimal energy or mass for the baryons. And this is a second order phase transition, because if we look at the baryon the total baryon density, the total baryon number in the system as a function of mu, just above the transition chemical potential, we found it actually rises up from zero smoothly. So there's no jump in the baryon number in this case. So baryon number here will be essentially our order parameter for this phase transition. And we also found that for large mu, the baryon number behaves like mu to 5 seconds. Okay. So that's the phase structure. But if we look more closely at the distribution of the baryons, we actually found that this distribution of the baryon density actually has a very sharp edge in this holographic direction. So it doesn't asymptote to zero to infinity. It actually has some sharp edge in this U direction. And this edge actually rises up towards the UV as we increase the baryon chemical potential. So one interpretation of, OK, this, of course, is just can be interpreted as just the energy behavior of this condensate that we're describing. But we are hoping that this could be a description for the quark Fermi surface in the gravity picture. We think that, sorry, not the baryon. Well, we don't know. Supergravity seems to be washing out the effect of even and odd
NMCs. Right. So fermion and bosons behave the same way.
Yeah, we don't really know. Right. But what does change is that, say, if we go into another setup, say in the D3D setup, when we turn on this fundamental sector, we actually turn on the NX2 hypermode, which has bosons and fermions. Mm-hmm. And then the baryon density actually has boson number and fermion number, so we can sort of say something there. So as I mentioned earlier, this would be a really good thing if it's true, and we can study the instabilities of Fermi surfaces this way, potentially.
But only with a large number of species of fermions. Mainly here.
I guess small number of.
I'm talking about the color.
Oh yeah, it works. Right. So yeah, it's large NC limit. So particularly we will be trying to understand the color density wave, and not really the superconducting phase.
Sure.
Okay. So it turns out that this picture that I just mentioned is only good for one flavor physics. Because when we have flavor greater than 2 or equal to 2, there is actually a more energetically favorable configuration for baryons. And this configuration is such that the D4 brain actually dissolves completely into the world volume theory of the D8. And the appropriate configuration for us is actually an instanton configuration.
Is this connected with the existence of pions?
It's separate from, it's connected to that. So basically, if you analyze the situation with the mesons in NF equals 1, it's just a U1 view on there, so you can give it half these. And using this description, so just to motivate the baryon number, in the Westermino term in the supergravity, there's actually a term that looks like this, where C4 is the four form flux, which is through the force sphere in the geometry. And if you integrate that out, we actually get a term that looks like this. So if we have some configuration with non-zero baryon density, it will couple directly to this U1 H field that we turn on, which is the baryon chemical potential. Right, exactly. So in this picture, baryons are really along the line of the skirmion model. They're in a solitoning object in the meson theory. Okay, so using this new description at zero chemical baryon chemical potential, people actually have found a correction to the mass for the baryons. And it turns out for the minimal mass, it's being corrected by something that's proportional to 1 over lambda. And C prime is a negative number, but because of our lack of knowledge of the non-abelian Born-Ehrenfeld action, we actually think that you can really trust the number the exact number there. Okay. Okay. That's it. And so still with this new description, new picture for the baryons, we want to minimize the free energy and see what's the most energetically favorable configuration. But we have two difficulties, which is the non-abelian DBI action is unknown. So we can't really try to analyze this beyond certain correction, Pornian correction. And also, there is actually another problem, which is even if we take the most naive prescription for the ordering prescription for the DBI, and we try to look for a configuration which is homogeneous in the field theory direction, we actually can't find one. We can't find one solution which is homogeneous in the field theory direction and it's non-singular and it has non-zero baryon charge, or the incident number is non-zero. So this may be an interpretation or a reason for the fact that there actually exists a phase which is characterized by inhomogeneous chiral density, chiral condensates in the large NCQCD at asymptotically large baryon chemical potential.
I think the answer is no. Okay, so still, facing with these two difficulties, we still want to forge ahead and see just using some approximation techniques, what we can get. So we'll use the most simple and naive ordinary prescription, which is ignore that there are actually matrices in this group. And we also just choose a singular homogeneous configuration, which, and the physical motivation is that we're taking that as a superposition of non-homogeneous, inhomogeneous solutions, which would be a nice physical feature, at least in asymptotically large density. Because just because you're packing things so densely, things tend to wash out. And what we seem to find, here's a plot for a typical profile for free energy. We find free energy has this profile versus the baryon number. This is a plot for fixed mu. And you can notice that there are actually two saddle points in this plot. One is at zero baryon density, baryon number, and the other one is at finite number. And as you tune mu, these two saddles actually exchange dominance. And the conclusion from that is that we actually have a first order phase transition. And we can estimate what is the critical baryon chemical potential in this case. And it turns out to have this particular form. That's actually another constant analysis, right? Okay. But at least we're sort of even surprised that we are able to get a leading order correction, right? Leading order behavior of the critical baryon chemical potential correct. So, but anyways, we are, this is sort of just an ad hoc analysis of the situation. But hopefully that this is telling us about something about the physics. And if we analyze the behavior of the baryon number and the free energy at a large chemical potential, we actually found it actually behaves like relativistic free fermions, and we still don't know how to interpret them. Okay. So with this, and since I have basically concluded before I started talking about Sakai-Sugimoto model, I'll just put on this slide for conclusion and outlooks. So we found a possible gravity description for quark Fermi surface, and we're actually in the process of checking this proposal in other models of holographic gauge theory, along the philosophy of what I just mentioned about the universality things, and hopefully we can see something. And we found a possible explanation for the homogeneous instabilities in large NCQCD, and we hopefully we can find some easy way to implement inhomogeneity in the ansatz that we start out with, which would actually possibly help us answer the question whether these variants are fermions or bosons. Because if they're inhomogeneous, we can sort of interchange them and see if they change phases or not. And there are possible extensions to finite quark masses by introducing strings connecting the BABA bars. And we can also turn on the theta angle in this case, which corresponds to turning on RR1 form around the compact factor equation. This is work by Beaton in this holographic QCD. Well, he actually studied it pretty early on that. So that's basically my talk. Thank you.
how did the Goldstone bosons actually emerge in the from the spectral analysis of CMS, like the A5 components?
Well, so in this case, the mesons are actually just the gauge field on the DAD grid. And if you analyze, in particular, the component of AU, right, it turns out that the spectrum has a zero mass particle in there.
I don't know if I can talk. In QCD, an NC is not much bigger than an F when they're adopted the same order.
Right.
So, how much do you think the gravity result that you're getting would change if you actually were able to compute whether you were NC or an F, the order one?
Yeah, actually, I think I can't say anything about that. Because it's actually a curiosity of myself just to see if we can actually find solutions with an F large and the fully reactive geometry would like it, what things would go on, would be in there. I think there are some recent advances in finding the dual geometry to be NF approximate NC situations in for SQCD, NX1 SQCD. But those solutions are at zero temperature, and zero temperature. So.
Is there a parameter that you can play with that can push up the cool supply advance? Is there a parameter that you can play with that can move up the cool supply advance?
Oh, that's great. Just 1/r, the compact condition.
Oh, that's just 1/r, okay.
Right.
Oh,
actually,
right. So does that mean that you could push this into a region which is QCD-like for as much as longer range of energy as you want?
Right, but the problem is, if you push that up, it just happens that the strong coupling scale is also being pushed up. So,
is there a parameter that you can play with which will separate those two?
No, not in this model. But there are some people are considering non-critical models by putting, say, D4 bar being a say 86, and there they actually have many qualitatively similar behavior with this cyclic supernova model, and there they don't have this problem, but they do have problems that coverages of order one in string scale.
But if you went to the limit, wouldn't you decouple the commutative line scale from the Cushing scale?
Pardon?
If you went to the limit of high curvature in the ball, wouldn't you decouple?